Welcome to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, our performing arts program devoted to Iowa's not-for-profit arts and cultural organizations. I'm Jacqueline Hallblom. For August, we'll discover what gems the WCF Symphony has planned for the 2017-18 season. We'll take a tour through the Grout Museum of History and Sciences, from the Prairie to the Trenches, Iowans in the Great War exhibit. We'll revel in Hancher's 45th anniversary knockout season, and we'll delve into the Zenith Chamber Music Festival's August concert lineup, along with their brilliant guest list of performing artists. That's all ahead on Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase. Thanks for joining us.
There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. It's a lot of rehearsing, and it's a packed week for our musicians and everything leading up to it, preparing for it. But it's so exciting, and last year was a huge success. We got such great feedback, and our attendance was phenomenal, and I'm hoping that it's even stronger attendance this year and that we pack every house.
The artistic director of the Zenith Chamber Music Festival and Drake's Briggs Endowed Professor of Cello, Dr. Ashley Sedan. This summer marks the third festival season of the Zenith Chamber Music Concert Series in Des Moines. The festival bestows Iowa with five stellar programs, kicking off on Tuesday, August 15th at Salisbury House.
The Zenith Chamber Music Festival is a concert series that lasts for an entire week, and we perform free concerts in a variety of venues across Greater Des Moines. And the goal of the festival is to reach wider audiences and play a wide variety of music and really entice people into coming to concerts. So I bring in some fantastic players who are on the international scene and performing in nationally recognized top-tier orchestras like the Atlanta Symphony and the Cincinnati Symphony and Houston Symphony. And they come to Des Moines, and for a week we perform a concert about every night. And I'm not only highlighting these international artists, but I'm also highlighting some of our top local talent. And we perform pieces that incorporate both guest artists as well as local artists, and I have local artists doing solos, and it's really an exciting week.
So did you start this chamber festival?
I did start this with the help of a couple very important donors. I had one donor in particular come to me a few years ago and say he wanted to give money to Drake University, but he wanted it to be directed towards not only raising the profile of Drake, but helping out the entire community of Des Moines. And so he basically gave me free rein to brainstorm how I think I could use his money. And I was thinking that it would be great to have a classical chamber music festival. And he is a music lover, and he just thought it was a great idea, and I'm very fortunate to have him. And since then, we've added several other big donors, and we rely mainly on private donors. I've been awarded grants from councils around Des Moines as well as Drake University, but for the most part, Drake doesn't provide financial help with this. They provide location and rehearsal spaces, but this is truly donor-driven festival. And my other main goal was just to make all these concerts free so that families can come. They're family-friendly concerts. They can come. They can listen. There's such a variety of venues, like at the Salisbury House and Gardens, compared to the Jasper Winery, compared to a beautiful church downtown, St. John's. And it's free. So if families want to try to dip their toes into coming to listen to classical music, and the kids are unruly or someone's not enjoying it, they can leave. They didn't pay for tickets. I hope they stay, but it's free, so it's just open to everyone.
Tell us about some of these fantastic musicians that you are bringing in.
Well, I'm bringing in Anna Ryder, who's a violinist in the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, and we actually go all the way back to our school days. We were at the Cincinnati Conservatory together in undergrad, and she's just an amazing player. She captures audiences' attention, and she's really just an emotional but technically brilliant player. My other violinist is Helen Kim. She was in the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra and is now in the Atlanta Opera orchestra. And like Anna, she's just a brilliant violinist and really good with interacting with audience members. My violist is new this year, Sheldon Persons. He's violist in the Houston Symphony Orchestra. And my cellist is Tony Katai, and he's also a cellist in the Houston Symphony Orchestra and teaches at one of the premier schools for orchestral playing in the United States, which is Rice University. My pianist is Kelly Kuo, and he's interesting. He's a phenomenal pianist, but at the same time, he is opera director at University of Texas Austin, Butler School of Music, and he's conductor of the Oregon Mozart Players. So he is supremely talented in all aspects of music. And it's just this group of musicians, we work so well together, and it's excellent.
And who are some of the local stars that will be joining you?
My local players this year will be Nicholas Roth. He's returning to play some Liszt, and he's our piano professor at Drake. And Clarence Padilla, who is our clarinet professor at Drake. And we are adding Leslie Mars, who's a flutist, and Patricia Silva, bassist. She teaches at Augustana University. And a vocalist this year, Edward Corpus, who is also a teaching artist at Drake. I'm really excited about the lineup this year. We are returning for our opening concert at the Salisbury House and Gardens, and it's just such a beautiful venue. And what I really like about this venue is that it kind of takes you back to how chamber music all began, in that chamber music was truly music that was written for a chamber, written for house concerts, and they were always small, intimate venues. If you think about Mozart and Haydn quartets, they were performed not in huge recital halls or Carnegie Hall type locations. They were performed at beautiful houses where the audiences could be right up there with the musicians and really feed off of the musicians. So I love this concert, and we're playing the great Brahms C minor piano quartet. And Helen, our violinist from the Atlanta Opera Orchestra, is performing Manuel de Falla, Suite Popular Espanol. And it's seven Spanish songs that have been arranged for violin. And we're doing some Schoenfeld Cafe music, which kind of is a little bit American and bluesy and classical at the same time. And Edward Corpus will be singing a trio of African-American spirituals. So all concerts are free, and you can walk into that opening concert and hope to get a seat. It is a small venue, so I'm offering, if people want to have a seat reserved, they can go online to the Zenith website at drake.edu/zenith. And you can purchase for $10 a seat to be reserved for you, which will also gain you entrance into the post-concert wine reception where you can mingle with the musicians and chat with them. And our next concert will be on Wednesday, August 16th, and that will be at the Johnston Public Library, and they're calling it the Loud Library event, and it will be inside, thankfully. And it's our first foray into jazz music for Zenith. We're bringing in the Damani Phillips Quartet, and I have no idea what he's playing, but I know it's going to be excellent because he's really well respected all throughout the region as a jazz artist. He is the saxophone professor at University of Iowa. So that will be at 6:30 p.m. in Johnston Public Library.
So you're taking this to a library? This is kind of different.
This is very different, and I'm looking forward to it. I have actually played recitals at libraries in Chicago and in Minneapolis, and you get a nice crowd. It's a different crowd than at, let's say, the Civic Center. So it's a great way to reach a different crowd. People bring their kids typically to this type of concert. And I know that the Johnston Public Library said they were going to have refreshments available as well for the audience members. So it'll be a nice laid-back event.
And Damani Phillips has like three or four recordings out as well.
Yes, and I'm hoping he brings them with him. We're not only presenting all of these different types of pieces and different ensembles, but we're also focused on education. And so on Wednesday, August 16th, we're holding a young artist masterclass, and we've had four high school aged players who've been selected from around the region who are going to come in, and it's kind of like a public lesson. They perform their piece for my Zenith resident artists, and the Zenith artists teach them on stage in front of an audience. So it's free and open to the public, and it's a great way for young players to not only practice performing, but to get valuable feedback from a wide variety of players.
Tell us where you're going next.
So our next concert is one of my favorites. It's at the Jasper Winery, and we were there last year. And it's just a fun event for everyone. It's inside the winery, so not outside. And audience members are sitting at tables, drinking wine, eating cheese plates, and listening to great music. It's fun as a musician because, again, you're close to the audience members, so you really feed off their energy, and there's nothing more exciting than playing on stage and feeling the engagement of your audience. And we'll be playing Handel Halvorsen duo. It's called Passacaglia, and it is a piece that is interesting in that it's based on a ground bass, meaning like harmonic series that starts off very Baroque sounding, very early classical sounding, and then Halvorsen puts a spin on it and it turns into something that's really flashy with all these crazy techniques like ricocheting the bow, so bouncing the bow on the strings and plucking with your left hand or playing on top of the bridge and fast notes, and it's really a cool piece. After that, there will be this piece by David Lang called Sweet Air, and David Lang is a favorite composer of one of my donors, so I'm really excited to be presenting this piece. It's not only a favorite composer of one of my donors, but my violinist Helen Kim just loves David Lang, so she's extremely excited about this piece. And then our bassist will be playing some Piazzolla tangos, and we're going to finish it out with the very famous Dvorak American String Quartet.
And then you're going to head to this wonderful cathedral you were telling us about.
Yes, the St. John's Church downtown. And here we're going to play some solo Bach with Anna Ryder. And when I think about churches, the first, beautiful old cathedrals, I always think Bach. Bach is just the resonance of the cathedrals and the string instruments together. It's a marriage made in heaven. So I'm looking forward to hearing Anna's Bach at this cathedral. And we're also doing the great Schubert C major cello quintet. So that's like a string quartet. So two violins, viola, and cello, but with it added another cello. So two violins, one viola, and two cellos. And it's really a fun piece. It's a favorite of one of my other donors. So I like to try to highlight pieces that are really great pieces and that people love. And I know people are going to gravitate towards this piece. And our violist will be playing a solo viola piece by Bowen called Fantasy. And this piece I was not familiar with before Sheldon brought it to my attention. And it's a modern piece, but it's beautiful harmonies and really interesting textures between the viola and the piano. And I think audiences will really enjoy it.
And then you're going to head back to Drake.
Yes, our culminating concert every year is at Drake University in our Szeslo Auditorium, which if you haven't been to Szeslo, you should really come to this concert. It's just this beautiful auditorium with gorgeous stained glass windows and a very resonant stage, so it's really a friendly stage to play on if you're a musician. And we're opening the concert with our very own Nicholas Roth playing some Liszt solo piano music. He's doing a portion of The Years of Pilgrimage by Liszt, and if you haven't heard Nicholas play, you should really come because he really connects to audiences. And this piece, while it starts off very sentimental and melodious, it quickly, as Liszt often does, turns into a very flashy piece. I'm looking forward to hearing Nicholas perform this. And then we're doing a Kadai duo. Anna Ryder and I will be playing the Kadai duo for violin and cello. And Kadai is really interesting in that when he was a young composer, he was really interested in the folk songs and folk idioms of the Hungarian people. And he traveled all throughout the region and going to small villages and recording Hungarian folk songs. And he incorporated this into his writing. So it's fun to play his music and try to imagine the folk idioms, the different instruments that they used, and different rhythms that kind of emulate speech patterns. So I'm looking forward to playing this with Anna. And we are also doing the Turina Piano Quartet and a string quartet by Elena Katz-Chernin called Fast Blue Village No. 2, which is a piece that none of my players had heard of, and I hadn't heard of until about a month ago. I was driving in my car and I had IPR on the radio, and this piece came on, and I just thought this was the neatest piece. I've never heard of this composer, but it's a cool piece, and I thought, I've got to buy this, and I bought it. So, and now it's part of the festival.
Dr. Ashley Sedan, Zenith Chamber Music Festival's Artistic Director and the Briggs Endowed Cello Professor at Drake University. The Zenith Chamber Music Festival is an annual summer chamber music festival concert series held in Des Moines, highlighting national and international guest artists as well as local artists. For more info, please see Zenith Chamber Music Festival's website at drake.edu/zenith. Iowa's blessed with a host of chamber ensembles and series. ISU's Amara Piano Quartet just released their world premiere recording of the American Piano Quartets on the Fleur de Saône Classics label. The Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar is performing tomorrow between 3 and 5 p.m. at the Union Park Floral Garden in Des Moines. They also have a guitar concert series starting later this fall. A new musical of upbeat songs and poignant ballads called Just Ann, featuring the life of former Texas Governor Ann Richards, will be presented at the Auster Region Theater in Cedar Falls on August 10th through the 13th. This premiere production is written by University of Northern Iowa's Cynthia Goatley and Rebecca Burkhart. Iowa Stock 2017 Music and Art Fair in St. Charles, Iowa, this year has a classic music showcase set up for Sunday, September 3rd between 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. on the Madison County stages. Ensembles featured will include Quartet 515, Amara Piano Quartet, Iowa Brass Quintet, Central Iowa Wind Ensemble, the Bellin Quartet, Hannah Song, and Kenneth C. Orchestra Iowa's first showcase chamber concerts of the season will be presented on September 22nd through the 24th. And the Ames Town & Gown Chamber Series kickoff concert will feature the Ensemble 4.1 Piano Quintet on October 5th. Just ahead, we'll discover the important role that Iowa and Iowans played during World War I. We'll dive into Hancher's exciting fine arts offerings for their 45th anniversary season. And we'll meet up with the artistic director and conductor of the WCF Symphony to hear about the orchestra's tantalizing 2017-18 concert lineup. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase. Over its 88-year history, the WCF Symphony has evolved into an organization inspiring to connect people and the community with a deeper musical experience. The WCF's goal is to debunk the myth that classical music is only for the elite and make it accessible for everyone, which is very evident in their eclectic concert season mix. Artistic director and conductor, Jason Weinberger.
We are really excited to open up our season with a return visit from Project Trio. They're amazing, and in a lot of ways, it's wonderful to start our season with them because so many things about what we do are embodied by them as well and by this program. So we're going to start with our regular Gallagher season right there at the beginning of September. And one of the most exciting things about that opening concert is we're going to hear a new piece that was written for Project Trio, and it's by a composer whose music we've performed before. It's called Scatter. And it's by Adam Schoenberg, who's a great composer, and it's very challenging. So we're going to have our work cut out for us. The rest of that concert's full of enjoyable stuff. We've got Aaron Copland's Appalachian Spring, and that's the full orchestra version. And we're also going to do a piece called The White Peacock by Charles Tomlinson Griffiths, who is a wonderful American composer, latter part of the 19th century, early 20th century. This piece is kind of Debussy-esque, and people just don't know this composer at all, but I think everyone is just going to love his music. It's so atmospheric and interesting. And as always, trying to find some surprising voices to toss in there with the things that we know and love, like Aaron Copland and Project Trio. So it should be a great mix.
Let's hear about your October concert.
Well, in October, we welcome Gary Kelly back. And so what's neat is something entirely new that we're doing with Gary. You know, Gary seems to have such an appetite for these projects from, you know, the planets. We had our Ellington Christmas Nutcracker. So this year we're going to do something for Halloween. So we're pivoting just slightly and looking into this telling of the Dracula myth that happened sort of after the original stories were told. There's a great film made in the early 20th century, Nosferatu, and that's sort of the storyline that we're adopting, and we're setting that to the music of Gustav Mahler, who wrote a couple of movements entitled Nachtmusik, night music. It's really very much like music of the forest, you know, and the deep, dark mountains. There's all kinds of wonderful things that bubble up in this music that's going to inform Gary's approach. So this will be really neat, like something very different than what's out there and also very different than what we've done with Gary. And then the rest of the concert is actually going to feature all this great spooky music from sort of the annals of classical music. So all kinds of really fun stuff on that concert. Some of it will be very familiar, like Symphony Fantastique and some of the pieces like that we typically hear on Halloween. And then a few things, including a piece by Busoni that I'm sure nobody's heard before. So it's going to be a fun afternoon of music and something that's going to be really great, I think, for families.
And then in November, tell us about that concert.
In November, we're going to be featuring the woodwinds in music from classical Vienna. So all of this music comes from, well, most of it comes from Vienna. All of it comes from the latter part of the 18th century and into the early part of the 19th century. Wind music was quite popular in social settings. Oftentimes, this music is referred to as Harmoniemusik, basically wind music. It's for these wind octets or combinations that are similar. So we're going to be hearing a wonderful wind serenade by Mozart that many people know, the E-flat major serenade, and also a rondino by Beethoven, which is fairly regularly performed. But then we're going to hear a Schubert octet, which is almost never performed. It was left incomplete by Schubert. And we're also going to hear a work by a well-known Scandinavian wind composer named Krummer. And Krummer's music is mostly known sort of through his clarinet stuff. He also wrote a whole series of wonderful wind octet partitas. And so we're going to perform one of those. And people are going to be delighted to hear a classical era composer who they may not know, but whose music is just right up there with Beethoven, Schubert, and Mozart. So it should be a really wonderful concert at the Brown Derby, just a perfect place to enjoy that music.
And then you squeezed a few holiday concerts into the mix.
Yeah, we've got a couple of things going on throughout the holidays. Our brass group is going to be the feature group of our Cedar Valley Christmas, which occurs the Monday after Thanksgiving. It's a great collaboration with the Boys and Girls Club. And then just a couple weeks later, we're going to be doing The Snowman, and that's also a return piece. Folks have just really loved that here. And when we first brought in the film, The Snowman, we were very excited to see if that might become sort of a regular thing that we would do every other year, like a holiday tradition. And that really is what it has become. We're very excited about that. And we'll also play selections from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker. Just a perfect holiday concert. We're really excited about that type of experience for families right before we get into the Christmas season.
And then you're going to head back to the Brown Derby.
So in February, we head back there for a counterpoint to our Serenades concert, which is in the fall. We're doing a Concertos concert in the winter there. And so we're going to feature several of our own musicians. Dan Freiberg, who's our second clarinet player, is going to be playing the shalamo, which is the Baroque ancestor of the clarinet. It's an instrument that resembles the clarinet in some ways. Doesn't have any keys, though. It has a totally different size and different sound. And so he's actually discovered a soprano shalamo that was used in this concertos that were written by a composer named Fasch. It's really delightful music. Our principal cellist, Isaac, is going to be featured in a wonderful concerto by C.P.E. Bach. That's going to be delightful to have Isaac play that piece for us. I'm going to perform one of Bach's harpsichord concertos with the ensemble, and then the whole group will play a concerto grosso, which translates as a large concerto. And that's basically a work for full ensemble where parts of the group are treated as soloists and then kind of alternating conversation with the rest of the group. Continuing our strides forward with our Baroque music concerts and the Brown Derby again, just a perfect place to enjoy that music.
And Lenny makes an appearance.
Next calendar year is the 100th anniversary of his birth. And this is going to be one of the more significant anniversaries in classical music here for this 5-year period that we're in. obviously, Leonard Bernstein is a hugely significant figure to all of us American musicians, and I would say to all classical musicians around the world. Regardless of what you have thought about his interpretations or his music, you just can't deny that this guy was a hugely influential figure as a performer, as a composer, as kind of a cultural icon. Created these young people's concerts, which millions of people experienced through TV. Then this concert, which we're performing, is going to feature collaborations with the Northern Iowa Youth Orchestra, the University of Northern Iowa Children's Choir, some guest artists and narrators from around the community. Really wonderful community event. And what we're going to try and do is kind of take in the whole spectrum of what Leonard Bernstein did, from his more popular music across to some of the more serious and some people would say a little bit more esoteric music, and really get a sense for who he was as an artist and an individual. And we're going to do some lectures, talk about his career as a performer. It's just going to be a really neat week or two there of exploring this amazing cultural figure from the 20th century who is not with us anymore, but turning 100 in 2018.
And tell us about your barn-burning last concert.
That may not be the very last concert of the year. I have a feeling next summer we'll be coming back to the River Loop to do some more stuff like we've done this summer. But before that happens in May, we're going to finish our season at the Gallagher with an amazing concert featuring a colleague of mine from Budapest. And his name is Laszlo Horváth. And Laszlo is a violinist, is trained at the Franz Liszt Academy there in Budapest. And he founded a chamber orchestra called Anima Musicae. I had a chance to work with them last year, and I was just blown away by how these guys play under Laszlo's direction. So I had this idea that we would bring him in to play and lead. So he's going to come and direct the Bartók Divertimento, which is one of the really famous string pieces, period, and probably the most famous Hungarian string piece. He's also going to play Rhapsody for Solo Violin by Bartók with orchestra. And then he's going to be concertmaster when we do this fabulous music by Kodály and Brahms, all this wonderful music with a background in Hungarian folk music, basically taking different ideas about Hungarian dance music and applying them to orchestra scores. And so he'll play concertmaster and I'll conduct those pieces. But the idea here is just really an exchange of ideas and technique, in particular bringing some of this Central European string playing style, which is very different from the way that we're taught to play in this country, and bring that to our audience and to our orchestra. This is just really exciting to have this opportunity. And usually don't engage a guest soloist for things like this. Usually they're just a soloist and that's all they do. But it's been really exciting to work with Laszlo and put this together. We programmed it together. We're going to work on the music all together. So it's really an exchange that I hope will really benefit the whole orchestra and our audience. I'm very excited to finish the season with this exciting music.
Jason Weinberger, Artistic Director and Conductor of the WCF Symphony. For more details, please visit wcfsymphony.org. The Quad City Symphony will present their Riverfront Pops concert, Beatles' Greatest Hits, on August 19th at LeClaire Park in Davenport. Orchestra Iowa will perform Bruce Morchestra 10 with the Cedar Rapids Opera Theater, featuring Beethoven's 9th on September 9th on the front lawn of Bruce Moore Mansion in Cedar Rapids. If you can't attend the concert, please tune in for Iowa Public Radio Classical's live broadcast. The Des Moines Symphony's first Masterworks concert will fall on the weekend of September 23rd. The Muscatine Symphony's first concert of their season is on October 7th. The Dubuque Symphony kicks off their season on the weekend of October 14th. The Southeast Iowa Symphony Orchestra presents their first concerts of the season on October 21st and 22nd. And don't miss Iowa Public Radio Classical's 10th Year Symphonies of Iowa 2016-17 Encore broadcasts, airing on Monday evenings at 7, now through December 11th. Just ahead, we'll discover details surrounding Hanger's 45th anniversary season. And we'll tag along with the Grout Museum of History and Science's curator of exhibits as she gives us a personal tour of the museums from the Prairie to the Trenches, Iowans and the Great War exhibit. This is the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
Billy, get your gun. Take it on the run. Hear them calling you and me, every son of liberty.
I kind of just want you to come in and see if you can get to know the individuals who are featured. It's a very interesting time. We try to point out the familiarities that may be present as well as the differences, and I hope it helps kind of make it more real for people.
Waterloo's Grout Museum of History and Science curator of exhibits, Aaron Dawson. Aaron created and makes history come alive at the Grout Museum's exhibit called From the Prairie to the Trenches, Iowans in the Great War. While World War I started on July 28th of 1914 and ended on November 11th of 1918, the United States didn't officially enter the conflict until 1917. 114,242 men and women from Iowa served in the First World War. And of those, 3,576 gave up their lives. Aaron fills us in on the Grout Museum of History and Science's exhibit and the historical significance of World War I.
The temporary World War I exhibit that we have just put out last month is kind of about the stories of individuals that perhaps aren't featured in our permanent exhibit or maybe not featured anywhere else at this time. And the reason we decided to do this now is we're coming up on the 100-year mark from the end of the war in November of 2018.
Tell us about why World War I is so important, because it often is overshadowed by World War II.
Well, it kind of sets the stage for World War II. Plus, it is kind of this first time in history where the world is actually globalizing. Communication is now transatlantic and cables can go anywhere at any time. So businesses are starting to spread. Trade is really interconnected. Like, it just is kind of this first international diplomacy / policy debate that we're used to seeing now. And it has actually set us up for things that we're still dealing with, like over in the Middle East.
Tell us about some of the things that happened in World War I. You just mentioned that it sort of set things up. What are some of the things that were very unusual about World War I?
Technological advances are very important at this part. This is the first time we're seeing the gases, like the mustard gas, and I think there's one more, chlorine gases, I think, first used here. Also, the machine gun makes its debut, and motorcycles and automobiles. So we've basically found better, more efficient ways to kill people, which just created this horrific battle scene that it wasn't seen before. So it created a lot of mental chaos, and we didn't quite know what to do with it. Even the stuff that we had, they weren't exactly sure how to efficiently use it, which was kind of interesting. In terms of other parts that society had played, this is the first time we're seeing women in America serve with the armed forces or military. They aren't quite near World War II status, where we see them training and flying alongside men, and they're nowhere near the combat lines, but they are starting to pick up jobs like the Hello Girls, who would kind of be telephone operators and translators to get information from one party to another, or the yeomen who worked alongside the Navy and the Marines as traditional support and, again, is more supportive roles. We have the Army Nurses Unit, which, you know, medics are always important, but this is kind of that first time where they're recognized and kind of folded into this sort of service.
And you have some artifacts from a very famous Iowa woman who was part of the nursing team.
Yes, we have quite an extensive collection on Julia Close, who I believe is from Independence, Iowa. She initially volunteered with the Red Cross, and I believe she went over prior to America joining the war effort. And she was later recruited by the Army Nurses Unit. She actually did also serve in World War II, I believe.
And there was a famous doctor as well who was part of World War I.
Yes, Dr. Lily Arnett. She went over to France with the Red Cross and she basically was kind of heading up the care of women and children, more so the refugees that were caught in the crosshairs. I believe she was mainly in Belgium and possibly France. She did come back to Waterloo afterwards and establish her pediatrics practice here in Waterloo.
You mentioned just briefly about the machine gun and some of those things, and you have actual artifacts of some things that were part of World War One.
Yes, we actually have a motorcycle in on loan from Craig Bravender, who I believe is part of the Cedar Valley Historical Society. We do have a Maxim gun as well on display. I know a lot of people have come and tried to mimic playing with it, when we encourage the mimicking, which is always good. But it is really nice to see that particular gun, I believe, was gifted to the city of Waterloo at some point. It did sit outside the municipal building for quite some time.
And Des Moines played an important role in World War One as well.
Yes, Fort Des Moines trained black officers to kind of lead the African-American units that participated in World War One. They really felt that having black officers would kind of reinforce the authority and really give them power to fulfill the potential that they might have been needed to at any point. So we feature a few that went through the officers' training program. So it's Lieutenant James Morris is kind of our most famous example. He went through the training program. He came back. He established his law practice in Des Moines. He published the Bystander and eventually became involved with the NAACP out in Des Moines. And I think eventually they named an elementary school for him. So he was a very active citizen after the war effort, as many of the officers who went through this program became. We have Victor Dolly. He actually came from New York. He attended Cornell for a little bit and then came through the program, went to war, and came back and again worked as a lawyer in Washington, D.C., working for the advancement of the African Americans and their civil rights. It's kind of a very wowing story because he just kept going, and I think he had a very long career, actually got a lot of things done.
World War One was really a patriotic war, and people, particularly African Americans, enlisted because of their patriotic feelings about America and their hopes of a better life for African Americans.
I think they may have actually discovered more what the potential for what life could be like while they were over in the trenches, particularly serving alongside the French. They were very aware of the sort of institutionalized racism back here and how that wasn't working in their favor at all. And what they probably didn't know is that it didn't have to be that way. And I think when they went over and were accepted and fought alongside the French, they realized that America didn't have to be this way. And so they came back and wanted to spread that and make it so that it was better for a lot more people.
Also, there was a side effect from World War One, and some people believe that actually it was caused by World War One.
Yes, the Spanish flu is a pandemic, and it is kind of a mystery as to where exactly it started. They're pretty sure it didn't actually start in Spain. But what did contribute to its rapid spread was our trade lines and our soldiers' transportation between all of these continents, and it kind of like just made it spread faster, especially because it didn't really go after the particularly young and the particularly old, which is usually what viruses do. This one went for the very healthy median range, and I think that's why it was particularly jarring for a lot of people.
So your exhibit here at the Grout Museum, what do you want people to come away with, or what do you want people to see while they're here?
The big takeaway, I believe, is that we're looking at a troop story. Like, we do want you to kind of think about how these individuals would have experienced this major event. And it was something that was not very expected at the time. I mean, we kind of think of it as ancient history, but to them, it kind of came out of left field and they really had to figure out how exactly they wanted to deal with what was presented to them.
People sort of had this glamorized idea about what war is and how it should be.
Yes, and this was very much not that. Again, with the advances in technology and the uses of the trench warfare, I believe there's quite a bit of very accurate trench poetry, but it really got into how deplorable the conditions were. I mean, these trenches were essentially mud and wood boards. Like, there wasn't very much in the way of hygiene. It was just not great. And then between that and all of the artillery shells flying and the barbed wire and no man's land, like, I believe a lot of people were just terrified after their experiences on those front lines.
And here in Waterloo, there's also a school that goes over to Europe and investigates some of these battlegrounds.
And that is Columbus High School. They go over to the large French cemetery that still has a few Iowans buried there, and they go and they document their trip. I believe they may do some rubbings. They really take their time and kind of honor these soldiers who just never made it home, which is a really nice effort. And I think it helps for those students to kind of realize what that sacrifice was.
And you have a special video that's going that has actual World War I veterans who served.
Yes, we were lucky enough to happen upon a gentleman who interviewed a plethora of vets. We just are showing the Iowans who served. And oddly enough, most of them are air servicemen, which is another branch of technology I haven't mentioned yet, where, you know, this is the first time we've got airplanes. And they were using balloons as well. So I think there are a few ballooners downstairs being interviewed. And you get to hear their experiences putting together these planes, because it was much like a Model T. You had to assemble it first and then, like, send it off the runway. And again, you know, they're telling you how they were learning how to use this technology, like what kind of practices did they put in. And it's really fascinating to just kind of stand and listen for a good couple minutes.
And also you have a special exhibit that has a lot of music from World War I.
Yes, we wanted to kind of demonstrate how familiar this war may be. A few of these songs are still pretty well recognized. So what we have done is we've dusted off our sheet music collection to kind of emphasize, while the technology may have been there, like, we are getting into gramophones and Victrolas. Not everybody would have had one yet, so the piano would still probably be your number one source of entertainment. But we also gave you an opportunity to listen to the music, because we really did want to not just let you see that over there it was popular. We want you to hear it and be like, oh, no, I really do know that song.
Also, at the museum, you have another exhibit that is running in conjunction with this World War I exhibit.
Yes, about 2 weeks ago, we opened The Cold War Ablaze, Iowans in the Korean War. It's yet another troop story, specifically looking at the experiences of the four branches who served in the Korean War.
Aaron Dawson, the Grout Museum of History and Science's curator of exhibits. The Grout Museum of History and Science's The Cold War Ablaze, Iowans in the Korean War exhibit continues through July 14th of next year. Korean War veterans receive free admission. The From the Prairie to the Trenches, Iowans in the Great War exhibit continues now through February 16th of 2018. To learn more about the Grout Museum District's different sites and incredible exhibits, please see groutmuseumdistrict.org or go to gmdistrict.org. last month, on July 23rd, Iowa lost a stunning soprano, an artistic visionary, and a longtime promoter of music. Carol Stewart Iverson, who was born in Des Moines, was a noted soprano and a Simpson College graduate. She won the Midwest Region Metropolitan Opera auditions, the first place award in the National Association of Teachers of Singing competition, and several other national vocal competitions. Her talents were one of the major reasons behind the 1973 decision by Robert Larson and Douglas Duncan to start the Des Moines Metro Opera. Between 1973 and 1979, Carol sang 10 principal Des Moines Metro Opera roles. During those years, Carol was the heart of the festival. Known for her lyric coloratura voice, in addition to her performances with the Des Moines Metro Opera, Carol also sang many leading operatic and oratorio roles with the Minnesota Opera, the Minneapolis Symphony, and other regional opera companies. During her career, she also taught on the voice faculties of McAllister College in St. Paul and Simpson in Indianola. A special celebration of Carol's life is scheduled for September 9th at 3 p.m. at Madrid Home in Madrid, Iowa. Iowa Public Radio extends their sympathy to all of Carol Stewart Iverson's family and many friends. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase. City's Hancher Auditorium is celebrating its 45th anniversary season with a gala and over-the-top concert offerings. The auditorium's executive director, Charles Swanson, shares details about this year's all-star concert lineup and other events and festivities sponsored by Hancher.
I talked to so many people after our opening season who were so worried. They said, oh, what are you going to do in your next seasons to come, because the opening season was just so stellar and just everybody just loved being back at Hancher. But you know, the 2017-18 season, it's our 45th anniversary. Hancher opened in 1972, and the 45th anniversary, that's the year of the Sapphire. So that love of Hancher needed to be celebrated, and so it's another great season. A season filled with a broad range of programs, and to really kick off the season in a grand way, Leslie Odom Jr. It's going to be a free outdoor concert. And for those of you who don't know, Leslie Odom Jr. was the first Aaron Burr in Hamilton when it opened on Broadway. He is a star, and the way he inspires young people to just achieve their best and to really do what their heart wants them to do. He is inspirational. And so a free outdoor concert on September 14th. So I'm looking forward to that. A big stage in the background that night will be our new beautiful Hancher Auditorium. Jazz at Lincoln Center with Wynton Marsalis. That will be soon after Leslie Odom Jr. And who doesn't love Wynton Marsalis? He is probably the most committed jazz educator in the history of jazz. I mean, Wynton is one of the finest. And we've termed that as a gala. People can get dressed up. People can come casual. And the word gala really kind of shows that this is a celebration of the 45th. And couldn't be a more appropriate artist for that evening. New York City Ballet moves. I'm so proud to say they've never been to Hancher before, and we thought it was time to bring them to Hancher. This is not the folk company. This is a smaller group of dancers. But within that group of dancers is an Iowa City native, Miriam Miller, who grew up in Iowa City, has made it big time with New York City Ballet. So two nights, two performances. And guess what? The Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Last time they were at Hancher was 1982. So we thought it was time that the Chicago Symphony Orchestra returned to the Hancher stage. Joshua Bell, a fine violinist. And for those of you that remember hearing about that artist that played in the DC subway, that was Joshua Bell. A brilliant violinist. That's going to be an evening to remember. And then Broadway, of course, is back to the Hancher season. We're excited to bring The King and I. This is a production from Lincoln Center and touring with exactly the same way it was presented in New York. A lavish, wonderful, big production for families. The music from The King and I is music that resonates with everybody, people of all ages. Motown, that's really the music that shaped our country. You think about Diana Ross, The Supremes, Stevie Wonder. That is full of songs that are so memorable, and that will be performances people will love. Kinky Boots. This is a fun Broadway show based on a British movie. This is a show that people who have seen it, they told me, I can't wait to see it again, but I can't wait to see it on that Hancher stage. Everything has just been so well planned in that new theater. So we're happy to be bringing Broadway back. And then Natalie McMaster, and this will be a holiday show. She's from Cape Breton. She's a fiddler, and she will be performing with her husband. We really wanted to bring some events, too, for families. Flip Fabrique, this is a Canadian circus. They were inspired by Cirque du Soleil, a very young company, full of energy, athleticism, and I know that children of all ages will love that. La Santa Cecilia, this is a Los Angeles-based group. They won a Grammy for the best Latin rock album a few years back, and I think they play every instrument you can imagine. Circa, this is a performance called Carnival of the Animals, and this is acrobats with beautiful projection and collaborating with classical music. There again, I think families will love that. Cloudgate, this is a dance company from Taiwan. They were at the original Hancher building several times on that Hancher stage. We're anxious to bring them to the new stage. The founder of Cloudgate is actually a graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop. So really a connection back to the University of Iowa, which I love. Brian Stokes Mitchell, he will be performing with the University Symphony Orchestra, conducted by William LaRue Jones. And Brian Stokes Mitchell is a big Broadway star, a little unknown, but his voice is just unbelievable. His signature song is The Impossible Dream. He performed for us a few years ago when we actually had a performance down at Riverside Casino. And the Billy Childs Quartet, Billy Childs, a pianist, was with us last year with the Ying String Quartet. He's going to be performing with his jazz quartet. We also have, throughout the season, several Muslim artists. These are artists that are part of a project called Embracing Complexities. We got a grant from the Doris Duke Foundation, and we really want to increase cross-cultural knowledge. So we have scheduled, I think it's about five or six artists with roots from contemporary Muslim majority regions of the world. And the first artist is a group, Niaz. It's an Iranian-Canadian-American band. They will be here for almost a full week and will be doing residency activities and things within the university, within the community. And I'm hoping to get out into some of communities outside of Iowa City, too. And instead of causing problems, really using the arts as a way to celebrate the differences and try to learn more about each other. Feathers of Fire, this is another artist under our Embracing Complexities grant. And this is a shadow play that really shares a magical tale that is really for all ages. And I think, from what I understand, about 140 different colorful shadow puppets. And I think this will be an excellent performance for young families. Tickets are available at the box office. You can walk up to the box office. We're open from 10 to 5:30 Monday through Friday. You can call the box office, 1-800-HANCHER. Our website, hancher.uiowa.edu. Order tickets through the website. I really hope that people come and really take advantage of all these opportunities. We also will have the Stanley Cafe, which is one of the best views in the Midwest, every Thursday night when the season starts, whether we have a performance or not, 5 to 7:30. And then the Hancher Culinary Arts Experience. We're collaborating with four restaurants, and those four restaurants are scattered throughout the season. You purchase your tickets in advance, and you come and enjoy a wonderful dinner that is prepared by, I think, the four restaurants. It's Northside Bistro, Baroncini's, Orchard Green, and the Trumpet Blossom Cafe. And we want people to come, and we want people to really enjoy and socialize together and really forget about your worries, forget about your cares, and let Hancher be available for everybody. That's very important to us.
Charles Swanson, Executive Director of Hancher Auditorium in Iowa City. Please find out more details at hancher.uiowa.edu. On August 26th, Ben Folds appears at the Adler Theater in Davenport. The Coralville Center for the Performing Arts presents the 1975 classic Monty Python and the Holy Grail on September 13th. On September 14th, UNI's Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center in Cedar Falls kicks off their season with REO Speedwagon. Also on September 14th, the Paramount Theater in Cedar Rapids brings the American Led Zeppelin to the stage. Iowa State Center's Stevens Auditorium in Ames opens its season on September 15th with TV actor and movie star Tim Allen. The Stephen Sondheim Center for the Performing Arts in Fairfield celebrates their 10th anniversary with the charismatic blues traveler John Popper on September 15th. And on September 16th, the Pella Opera House hosts an evening with Mark Twain. August Iowa Art Showcase broadcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Program thanks for this show goes to Ashley Sedan, Jason Weinberger, Aaron Dawson, and Charles Swanson. Production thanks goes to Iowa Public Radio's Tony Daner. Production assistance goes to IPR's Catherine Perkins, Jim Davies, and Chris Fenton. Operations thanks goes to IPR's Jason Burns, Sean McLean, Nick Brinks, and music director Al Shares. Research was provided by Rachel Berenger. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. Thanks for joining us. For more information on Iowa Public Radio's programming schedule and Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, please visit our website at iowapublicradio.org.